This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org.
This week on Meat and Three, we're jumping into a world filled with fizz, iridescence, and deliciousness. We're talking about bubbles.
It came from the air gas truck. Yeah, no, I never thought about it before that.
And I think it's emerged as a bulbous tea shops, a site of Asian American youth identity building.
We're called the invisible industry because these products you don't really see, but they're around us in every way, every day.
Listen to Meat and Three wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast. I'm Alexis Santos, a food editor at the Feed Feed, the world's largest crowdsourced food publication and social media community, serving as your daily source for what to cook, bake, eat, and drink. Throughout season four of the Feed Feed podcast, we will be trying to help you solve the daily question that we are all faced with, which is, what's for dinner? Each week, we will be speaking with members of the hashtag Feed Feed community who are a constant source of ideas and inspiration and help us get dinner on the table every night. Today, I'm so excited to be joined by Wenjie Ying. Wenjie is the founder and CEO of Local Roots NYC, which is a mission-driven business that connects New Yorkers with local farmers and sustainable regional growers. Ying combines first-generation hustle with female intuition to lead Local Roots and the regenerative agriculture revolution. Wenjie has been internationally recognized for her work in the field of sustainability and agriculture. Check her out on social media at Wenjie Ying and Local Roots at Local Roots NYC. Welcome to the Feed Feed podcast, Wenjie. I am so happy to be chatting with you again.
Wow, Alexa, I sound so cool when you introduce me.
I looked up your bio, you know, obviously I know who you are, but it was very well articulated when I Googled you. So I'm like, wow, look at Wenjie, boss lady in the house.
I just need you to like introduce me as a hype woman everywhere I go.
I will be your hype woman. I'll be like, boop, 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 yeah. Here's Wenjie. Any day. God. No, you're awesome. And I'm so excited that I'm back in New York now so I can finally like engage with what you're doing at Local Roots. So why don't you give, like, before we get into like the interview questions, give a quick little spiel from your perspective of, you know, what Local Roots is all about. Obviously something that you're very passionate about and a leader in the space. So why don't you give us a quick little summary of what it is that you do over at Local Roots?
I feel like you did a great job, but I'll just do my best to follow you.
Yes.
So Local Roots NYC, I founded this in 2011, and the idea was to really modernize the CSA model and to make really great, high-quality organic produce more convenient for a New Yorker's lifestyle. And what I mean by that is at the time, you know, CSAs are generally a 9-month commitment, and you're usually subscribing only to vegetables. And having that time and that financial commitment in New York City is actually very difficult. A lot of people, you know, they might go away for the summertime or they have school. Like there's, you know, it's also just a lot of money to pay up front. So I wanted to change that. I wanted to make it more approachable. So our subscriptions right now are 3-month subscriptions. We have everything from organic veggies to pasture-raised meat to like pasture-raised eggs, anything that's local, sustainable, we carry it. And if we don't carry it and it tastes delicious, you should tell us and we will carry it. So we have pickup locations all throughout Brooklyn and Manhattan. That is the reason. The reason for that is that, you know, if you wanted to join a CSA, if you live in Queens and you can't find one in your neighborhood, well, you don't want to have to like, you know, get on the subway and go really far to have to pick up your groceries. We have many locations throughout the city. We also offer home delivery, which people have found super convenient and helpful during the peak of the pandemic. And in addition to multiple pickup locations and delivery and subscriptions to, you know, produce and fruit, we also have add-ons. So if you want to get chocolate tahini from a Pennsylvania vendor, or you want to get chocolates or I'm trying to think of what I eat a lot from our add-ons. Even like just whole chickens, you can also just add that onto your order. So we're trying to make it kind of a hybrid of a CSA and a farmer's market all in one. So that's like in summary of what Local Roots is. And we're privately funded, which means like we don't have any investment money behind us. And we're really proud to support a ton of minority-owned vendors and a lot of female owners also.
So Wenja, your mission and everything that you do over at Local Roots is absolutely amazing. But let's take it back to the beginning. Obviously, you've been involved with food and, you know, all things culinary and agriculture for a while. But tell me a little bit about kind of food and your family and what was kind of your childhood, you know, involvement with food. I know you're Chinese, so kind of tell me a little bit about your background in the culinary sense.
I'm actually glad you bring up the word mission because I actually forgot to say that. You know, we're really a lot more than just a small business. We're a lot more than just a food delivery business. We really have a mission of bringing people together to build community in New York City. And we really have a mission of helping support regenerative agriculture so we can keep fostering and nourishing the farmland in the Northeast. So you know, everything we do, the day-to-day of, you know, getting that super sweet bunch of carrots to you, that is really with a higher goal to really heal the food system and make people happy in New York City. So my background or my childhood, I grew up on Long Island. My parents came to this country in the 70s to really just like build an American dream for themselves. They came to college here with nothing and they achieved their American dream. And part of that American dream was really just to make an easier life for their children so that they would have the freedom to do what they love. So I would say that now I'm on my own personal mission to achieve my own American dream. And I haven't really figured out what that is quite yet. I mean, in terms of a career, like I love what I do. I've been doing Local Roots. I've had this company for 10 years now, and I've every day I've really loved every moment of it. And the other part of my American dream, I think, is to really just help. This sounds like really high and mighty, but I'm really trying to help evolve humankind. Yes. In terms of, you know, there's a lot of like injustice and inequality happening right now that's showing its face in our country. And I'm really trying to rally people to kind of just be more responsible citizens of the world and be more responsible and kinder to each other. But in terms of food, I've always eaten like kind of a hybrid of what an immigrant might think is American food, you know? So I ate like pasta with canned corn. I totally thought that was an American meal.
it's not.
I think I realized it's not like a couple of years ago and I'm 36. But there's
what was like the sauce with that, like pasta and canned corn and what sauce?
Yeah,
like what was the dish?
Like a tomato sauce with like ground beef and canned corn. And there's something nostalgic about that metallic flavor of the canned corn. And I've actually
really nice and metallic and beautiful.
Yeah. I've actually heard this from other people. Like my friend who's she's Jamaican and she was like, yo, the other person that I have met that eats canned corn with pasta is also a Chinese person. So somehow this like secret book of like Chinese immigrants has passed down this really weird flavor combination.
Well, so be it. I'm sure, yeah, it's nostalgic. It was, you know, it was a vibe. So you have like those kind of pseudo-American dishes. I know you have kind of picked up on some of the like traditional Chinese, you know, dishes and flavors from your parents. So like, what were some of the, like, I guess, Chinese influences in your childhood, I guess, experience?
I think, it's funny, like my mom actually never sat down to teach me how to cook. She never wanted me to like be in the kitchen because I would create a mess. But I really made these things on my own. You know, I kind of did my own research. So I really love some of the dishes that my parents would make because some of the dishes that I've grown up eating, I never realized, but they were passed down from my grandmother who grew up in a small town in China And it's really home-style cooking, so you're not going to find these dishes outside of the town that she grew up in. So that really just makes me really treasure food because it's kind of like this, it's like a time stamp, or like it's like putting something in a time capsule in some way. It's like a flavored time capsule. But so...
TM.
Yeah, exactly.
TM. Flavored time capsule.
Yeah, exactly. So some of my favorite dishes that I have learned as an adult to make would be tea eggs, which we showed how to do on the feed during Chinese New Year. That was so much fun.
Love tea eggs.
And there's, you know, like mapo tofu I've been cooking. I learned how to do that at a cooking class in Shanghai recently, actually. I've learned how to make hand-pulled noodles. There's a dish called zajian mian, which is kind of like a... If you imagine, it's like a... If you could imagine Chinese spaghetti, it's kind of like that. It has noodles, it's ground pork, and it's cooked in like soybean paste. It's really yummy. So yeah, I've just been kind of exploring the... I've been thinking about the dishes that make me miss home and trying to recreate it with either like YouTube videos or referencing my mom's recipes also. And I think that the weird, the quote-unquote weird combinations that I grew up eating, I actually think that's transformed my cooking the most because I was never brought up with like... I think I've just learned in my life that I don't really see rules or boundaries in cooking. I don't think, oh, this flavor combination has to go together because this is just the way a dish is. For me, I kind of think, what kind of weird flavors are going to make a happy experience in my mouth? Which is why I'm always like blending like, you know, spicy with something sweet. I'm always kind of like having contrast in flavors. And I think I have that creativity because I ate so many random things growing up.
Well, then it was all worth it. That's
yeah, it's totally all worth it.
Yeah, it's interesting that you're, you know, first generation, but a lot of your kind of traditional Chinese dishes you've been picking up in your adult life by watching YouTube and whatnot. But I guess as you kind of transitioned into a career in the culinary space, was, I guess, at what point did it become important for you to kind of wrap your arms around some of these traditional Chinese recipes that you grew up with? Because I guess you said when you were little, your mom kind of didn't even want you in the kitchen. So like, at what point was it for you that you were like, hey, I want to try to make some of this stuff?
I think that when I moved to New York and was living here alone, that was really important to me because my whole family had moved from Long Island. My mom, my parents had moved to California. Both my brothers were living in China. So it was really just me on this side of the world, and cooking Chinese dishes that I grew up loving was really a way for me to feel like I was back home and like a little kid again. So that's definitely where it came from. And
that's so cute.
Yeah. And then it's really adorable. And then I've been trying to encourage some of our farmers to start growing more Asian greens. And as we're doing that, I'm trying to just think about, you know, like how to incorporate, like how to teach other people how to cook these greens that I'm familiar with. And we're actually opening up a cafe and marketplace in the end of April, early May. And the whole menu is going to be a farm-to-table Chinese menu of a bunch of dishes that I grew up loving as a kid. So in this whole process, it's been really great for me to really break down the recipes and understand why some ingredients are going in dishes, what kind of flavors it brings out, because I have to understand how the dishes are made to be selling to someone else.
So where is that market going to be?
It's going to be in Carroll Gardens on Court Street. Right, there's a park nearby. It's Court and Carroll, or First Place, I think. Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll be there. You tell me when. I'm coming. That sounds absolutely amazing. Yeah, farm to table Chinese. Like, sign me up. So were you, I guess, in your training of kind of developing these flavors and, like you said, coming up with combinations and stuff, would you call yourself like self-taught, or I guess how would you kind of explain your culinary expertise? Just kind of trial by fire?
I'd say definitely trial by fire. I mean, I am someone who just really wings it in life. regardless of what it is. So I am really, I'm truly taught by the seasons, because the one rule I live, the one rule I cook by is by the seasons. I only cook with seasonal produce. I'd say 99% of what I cook with is from local roots. It's the same way how we're sourcing at our new cafe. 99% of the ingredients are going to be from our local farmers. So whatever's in season, I want to figure out something to make with it.
I love that. And I feel like it's something whenever you, whenever someone brings it up, or I eat at a restaurant that's very farm to table and, you know, emphasis on local produce and ingredients, I always think to myself like, oh, this is so important. I need to be doing this. And then I kind of fall out of it. So I guess, how do you, you know, because people are kind of, as you know, like as a New Yorker, you know, we, and really everybody has super busy lives. And, you know, I don't even go to the grocery store anymore. I pretty much just get it delivered all the time and just kind of fall into the rut of making what I'm comfortable with and kind of getting into this routine of, yeah, I make, you know, so many things a week. And how do you recommend someone kind of making that shift into kind of focusing more on, you know, local or seasonal? Or how do you, how does one make that shift kind of out of their routine, just regular, what they're doing, you know, at the grocery store or delivery, to really having an emphasis on seasonal local ingredients?
I actually find that cooking seasonally is a lot easier, because I'm probably like you and most people that cook frequently at home. I cook the same thing almost every day for every meal, but mm-hmm. it just tastes different because I'm just using whatever ingredients are in season. So if I'm cooking the same thing in April versus July, it's the same method. It's the same, you know, it's the same dish, but it tastes different because it's different kinds of vegetables in it based on what's in season. Right. So I actually find that to be super easy. I'll also maybe switch up spices, right? Like, so sometimes I'll kind of combine a bunch of different Asian spices and use sesame oil and soy sauce in a saute. Or if I'm going to just, you know, or one day I'll just use a lot of garam masala and cumin, and that's going to have a different flavor. So for me, I actually find, once you have the really good ingredients that are seasonal, it's actually easier to cook. Plus, everyone that has ever had something from a really great farm knows that the difference in flavor, I mean, how flavorful something can be, even in its raw, purest ingredient form, straight from a farm, that's gonna carry your, it's gonna carry through your cooking. You don't have to do, I don't do much work. Literally, my cooking takes like, I probably cook most of my food in like 5 to 10 minutes.
What?
Yeah, because like, I'm not, what do I have to, I'm not, well, I don't have to change much with like what Mother Nature gave me. It tastes so right. good to eat raw. It really, it's, and I'm not even saying that because I'm trying to sell something to anyone. Like, when you work with the best ingredients, you just let that, you let those ingredients speak for itself. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'm inspired. Okay.
And you know what, Alexa, like I get, legit, I get my deliveries, well, I get my groceries delivered to me too. I have a Local Roots employee. I'm part of the, I'm part of the route. They deliver my food once a week. And it's so, it's, it is a great experience to get your food delivered. And it's such, yep. it's such a prize to open up the box and see all these cute little veggies and fruits in this box. Yeah, it's, it feels, a lot of our customers say it feels like Christmas every time, which I Aww. Totally agree with. I never got presents during Christmas, but I can imagine this is what the experience feels like.
Okay. Well, look at that. Yeah, that sounds way more fun than my, like, you know, grocery bags. You know what I mean? But yeah, no, I mean, it makes total sense. And, you know, you see, I feel like the best chefs in the world kind of say what you said in the sense of letting ingredients speak for themselves. And that's, you know, something that just remains true. And the quality really does kind of shine when you are focusing on that. So mm-hmm. I think that's, you know, it's definitely inspiring me kind of talking to you and, you know, hearing about this way of, cause you're, you know, you're a busy New Yorker who's cooking and enjoying food and life in this way. So, I mean, really anybody can do it. So obviously now, I don't know how long you've, I mean, you've had Local Roots for a decade. How has your like cooking style and, you know, perspective on all this evolved over time? Cause I imagine, you know, don't want to assume, but as a kid, I would assume you weren't as focused on sustainability and local agriculture. So I guess what was this like evolution of your, I guess, culinary life to be so, you know, focused on this?
It's funny because when people message me about wanting to work at Local Roots and they send me their resume or they talk about their background, I'm like, damn, have you been studying local agriculture since you were a kid? Like, some people really have just grown up with this experience. I never had that. All right, I grew up in the decade of like the Wonder Bread and the McDonald's, and those things were like super normal. And I'm not hating on it because it's part of my childhood. But obviously now that I know what I know, you're like, oh God, how am I not dead yet?
Oh my God, I think about that all the time because I was a 90s baby. And, you know, like you mentioned, you know, with the Wonder Bread and the McDonald's, I think back, you know, I grew up in the era of like slime and like purple ketchup and like goo candy, like all the, you know, like toaster strudels, kid cuisines,
so
like
good.
Pop-Tarts with all those like gross flavors. And I think the same thing. I'm like, wow, how am I like upright and standing at this point? I literally grew up on like high fructose corn syrup and like food coloring. So, like,
oh my God, totally. And you know what? Like, okay, so I bring that up because I did not come from a culinary background. I did not come from I wasn't like an NYU food studies kid. I didn't grow up composting. I grew up eating Wonder Bread, going to McDonald's. I grew up, you know, I'm sure just throwing my trash out and not recycling. And I just learned so much by experience. Once you start doing a little bit, you just start learning and it becomes part of your habit. I'm not different than anyone else. And like my life is so busy also, right? Like I'm constantly traveling and I'm constantly having ideas of like different projects to do. I'm constantly hanging out with friends. Like I'm not spending all my time in the kitchen. I'm spending the least amount of the kitchen, but I'm getting the most out of it, right? I don't have to go through the whole spiel with you, but I just want to tell people that if I can do it, literally anyone can do it. You just can't like set high expectations that you're going to walk into the kitchen, you're going to cook a 3-course meal every single night. Like that is not what's happening in my kitchen. I'm cooking super simple meals that is made with love. So it honestly tastes amazing like that. And it's saved me time. I forgot what the question was actually. I just started going on this rant and I just want to tell people.
Well, you know, it's your culinary evolution. It all wraps up into the same thing.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Actually, what I was also going to say is I was a person that in college I would buy, and when I first moved to New York, I would buy the same ingredients at the grocery store. I'd always buy broccoli, bell peppers, and spinach. And that's what I cooked with. And I'd buy the same kind of cuts of meat from that was wrapped in plastic and styrofoam. It was disgusting.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd stir fry everything. That's what I cooked all the time. And I cannot even imagine now that it's so limiting. Like you just think about how small your food bubble is, right? Like there's so many things I've tried now by eating seasonally. There's so many different flavors I've experienced. And that is, it's really, really beautiful when you think about it like that, right? It's like, do you want to just be living with only knowing, by only like knowing one person in the world, or do you want to know 100 or 200 and hear all their stories?
Wow, that's such a beautiful way to put it. So what age or how old were you? At what point of your life was it that you kind of made this shift? Or was it a slow shift? Or was there kind of an aha moment? Or how did that kind of happen for you?
I think I was probably about 24. I had joined AmeriCorps and I was helping out at a food justice nonprofit called Just Food. And that was my first introduction to CSAs. I was helping people start CSAs. I was writing up like tips on how to work with local farms. And that was my aha moment in New York and my whole life, right? It was like I was introduced to a community. I saw people come together and from all different parts of the city and bond over something they loved. And it felt so wholesome. It was really incredible. And that's the first time I like went to a farm. I was like, oh my God, like I forgot food actually comes from somewhere. And the farmer cooked his lunch on the farm. And it was incredible. And I just slowly from there just started becoming more addicted to the whole experience of farm to table.
Wow. And that, look at that. And look how far you've come ever since.
Yeah.
It all happened how it was supposed to. I love that.
Yeah.
So how do you kind of approach, you know, it's probably a simple question for you, but how do you approach what you're making for dinner each night? You know, are you really just kind of inspired by the produce you have on hand, or do you go into the week thinking like, oh, I'm really in the mood for this? Or how do you kind of approach making these kind of awesome, fresh, seasonal meals for yourself?
I'm really someone who makes decisions on my intuition. I don't know if it's a Libra thing. Someone told me recently that he's like, you know, Libras are really indecisive, but then in the end, they always make the right decision if you trust your intuition.
Okay.
So I actually, when I cook, most of the time, I just close my eyes and I think about, okay, Wenjay, what flavors do you want to have in your mouth? What kinds of textures do you want? And then I cook that based on what I have in my fridge. And it usually ends up being something similar all the time. Like I said, like I usually either saute or roast veggies. I usually do a spice blend of either, I do a lot of like garam masala, curry, and cumin and chili peppers as a spice blend. And then I'll eat that with grains. And sometimes I'll sprinkle on like some kind of raw green, like an arugula or some kind of spice blend or microgreens or pea shoots for like pop of freshness. And I'll top it with an egg. So,
oh, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Bring it all together.
Yeah. Or if there's no egg, I'll usually cook like ground meats. I think ground beef and ground pork and ground chicken, it's so easy to cook with. So I can really eat that. I probably eat that like every single meal every day. And I just change up the vegetables. I just change up the grain, or I just change up the spices.
Wow. Well, and it sounds delicious and like it's really, you know, nutritional and filling and satisfying and healthy without feeling healthy. And I think changing even just like the spices of that, like you could really take that so many different directions. So what are some, I guess, besides your, you know, your local roots deliveries, what are some things that you kind of always have on hand in the kitchen? Like what are some staples in Wenjay's kitchen?
Yeah. And the staples are really what's going to be a game changer in everyone's cooking. So I always have sesame oil. I always have soy sauce. I always have this thing called yondu, which is like, it's like a gluten-free, organic, kind of like umami soy sauce replacement. I add it to everything. and I always have like some coconut milk and just various spices. So for example, like that dish I always cook, right? Like if I'm going to cook the same thing one day, if I do the sesame oil and some soy sauce, it's going to have a different flavor than if I do olive oil and the spices I was talking about before. So yeah, like different kinds of like oils like that, kind of make changing flavors really easily. And my freezer is full of ramp butter that I froze last year.
What type of butter? Ramp butter?
Yeah. I like made.
So is it like a compound butter with ramps?
Yeah. I made a bunch of it because we had a shitload of ramps last year because we sell ramps, you know, when it's ramp season. And I bought a bunch from Local Roots, and I just made a bunch of ramp butter, a bunch of ramp pesto. Yum. And then I sometimes forget about what I froze. And so I have to eat it all before ramp season comes back, which is happening in 2 weeks. So I got to eat a lot.
Everybody, ramp season, don't forget.
Ramp season, boop, 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 is coming up.
Oh my gosh, yeah, who would have known? Not something I ever would have thought about.
Oh my God, we've literally had like a ticker at Local Roots because it's such a... People get so excited about ramps, and you know, you only have one shot with it. So we've been talking to our forager like every day for the past month, like for getting updates. So yeah, you can get your ramps at Local Roots.
All right. Sign me up for the ramp, ramp trail.
<Yeah. laughs>
I don't think I've ever cooked with ramps, but I might have to now. I mean, obviously I've eaten them before, but it's never something I've had in my kitchen, but sign me up.
Oh, they're super easy to cook with.
Yeah, I mean, they're kind of like, I'm like sort of like a leek-ish, right?
Yeah,
a little oniony, yummy. All right, all good, all good. Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about eating seasonal and it's ramp season. So
you got to do it.
Say no more. All right. We are going to take a quick break and hear from our sponsors.
This episode is brought to you by Fulton Stall Market, reopening their outdoor market in the Seaport District in May 2021. Fulton Stall Market is a nonprofit, indoor, public farmers market. It offers locally grown and produced, healthy and affordable, fresh food to the Seaport and Lower Manhattan community. Fulton Stall Market is a direct sales outlet for over 100 New York region farmers and small batch independent food producers. They have been operating as a public market to serve the Seaport community since 2015. While you shop at Fulton Stall Market, you can pick up a few guides from Escape Maker's informational kiosk. Escape Maker connects urbanites with local farm, winery, craft beverage, and culinary getaways within a day's drive or train ride of New York City. Learn about day trips from New York, where you can explore the best agritourism the region has to offer. Learn more at fultonstallmarket.org and escapemaker.com.
Wenjay, tell me, this might be an interesting question for you. Who inspires you, I guess, either from like a culinary standpoint or in life? Like, who are some of your inspirations?
I have just been traveling again. And people that I meet when I travel really, really inspire me. I think they inspire me not only, it reminds me the kind of person I want to be, you know, like you just meet, like for me, I meet super kind and open people when I'm traveling. Mm-hmm. And that inspires me. You also get inspired. Like recently I was in Jamaica and I spent the day with a Rasta. He has like a treehouse he built off the grid in the woods in the hills of Jamaica. And he made his own little like kitchen outside and he cooked me this veggie dish from like veggies from his garden that he has. And that was like, I mean, it didn't inspire me to cook differently because that's how I cook also. I think it was just really cool. I mean, I really enjoyed the different flavors that he was using. Like he doesn't use a lot of spices, you know, it's very, very simple. It's very clean and it's really just showcasing the ingredients. So I really love that people just live like this. Mm-hmm. And you don't have to like convince them to change their lifestyle habits because this is just the way that their life is. So that's inspiring. And street food really inspires me. Like just watching how street food is made and just watching the people cook it. All the different flavors and colors, like that's really inspiring to me. I think what Dan Barber is doing, he's always inspiring. Dan Barber.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure most people know who Dan Barber is, but...
I guess it's hit or miss.
Yeah, so I just figured why not...
Blue Hill Stone... I'm like, why am I forgetting the name?
Yeah, so he's a chef at Blue Hill, which is at the farm Stone Barns.
It's okay, Blue Hill Stone Barns. Yes. I'm like several nouns.
Yeah, yeah. But they're two different they're two different entities, just so people know. Stone Barns is the farm, educational nonprofit farm, and Blue Hill is a restaurant. And he started a seed company recently called Row 7 Seeds. And I talked to their head, I talked to their farmer there, and I've also talked to like people on their culinary team. And it's just really cool because he's really changing the ways that we look at. I guess most people don't look at seeds, but like he's making it a little easier for farmers. So for example, there's a variety of a vegetable that will change colors when it's ripe. So a farmer knows that this vegetable is ready to harvest. I just think he spends a lot of time thinking about really how to push the envelope in terms of agriculture and how to be more sustainable. And he really pushes people to really think about local eating and seasonal eating through fine dining. I think that's really cool. I have a friend, his name is Zach Wolf. He's the head farmer at Al Gore's farm. He does amazing work researching how different kinds of varieties of vegetables
have a higher impact to sequester carbon from the environment back into the ground. So I really, I talked to him a lot, and my friend Tom Newmark from this company, this organization called the Carbon Underground. Those two guys are like my point people to really constantly learn about how soil and regenerative agriculture can have such a positive impact on the world. And it really helps me understand that, you know, a lot of people think organic farming is you take a seed and you put it in the ground and you just don't put pesticides on it. Yes, that's kind of what it is, but there's so much science behind it. There's all these different things that are happening in the soil and happening in the environment to make all of this be beneficial to our bodies and be beneficial to the land. So I love learning about that because to me, it's really important to dig deeper into why eating local is important and to have stronger and stronger reasons to give people. Because, you know, like there's a lot of competition in the marketplace for organic, right? If now lots of corporations are selling organic food, so how are we supposed to know the difference between organic that you find at, like, you know, the grocery store through a Foxy brand versus organic at the farmer's market or at Local Roots? They're always going to end up going to a lower price point unless they can have the right education to make the better decision. So I would say that that's really inspiring to me because it's constantly making me innovate what I do also.
Oh, look at that. What a lineup, an all-star lineup of inspirations and very diverse and eclectic. Mm-hmm. We've got the Jamaican guy that you met. We've got Dan Barber. We've got quite a lineup. That's awesome.
I realize that they're all men, and I feel a little guilty about that.
That's all right. Well, I'm sure there's plenty of women that inspire you on a literal daily basis, including yourself, honestly, and probably your mom and, you know.
Yeah. I would say that the women that inspire me are really the people that I, like you were saying, I know day to day, you know, like, I think Gail Simmons, she's the judge on Top Chef. I'm friends with her, and she really inspires me, the fact that she's so busy, but she still makes so much time for her friends, and she makes so much time for her family, and she has no ego around the work that she does. I just think that it's amazing. I love learning through her experiences about how to be this really, like, strong woman with a strong career, but also makes time for her social life.
Yeah, that's, I mean, you gotta, I always feel like something has to give somewhere, whether it's like work, friends, family, having fun, sleep, exercise, mm-hmm. you know, fitting all those things in. It's like, if you think about it, you know, as like a Venn diagram, like, you know, one of those things, like you have to choose some, you can't have them all, but it is always, you know, inspirational to me too, to see people who can juggle it all. So that's a good one. I love that.
I've honestly, like, when you're talking about the different things you kind of have to, like, maybe choose or sacrifice, I've gone through all those phases with being in business for 10 years, especially because, like, I don't have a business partner. We don't have investment money coming in here. So I've had to make different sacrifices throughout the year. You know, like, in the beginning, like, I never slept and I didn't really have a social life. Mm-hmm. And so it kind of took a toll on my personal life. And now a lot of the work I do is, I think about, I can't do any of this work if my life isn't balanced. So I make it a point, no matter what, to have that Venn diagram be like equal parts business, equal parts personal life, equal parts like mental health. And yeah.
Yeah. No, it's so important. And especially, you know, in the pandemic type life that we're all living, you know, for those who are, you know, working from home, and, you know, work is at home, home is at work, it has become even harder to, you know, separate the two things. And I think, you know, you bring up mental health, and, you know, that's kind of a passion point of mine. And, you know, that could be a whole other tangent, a whole other podcast, but, you know, kind of in prioritizing that, no matter, you know, how busy you are, you know, as a, you know, entrepreneur like yourself, to, you know, make the time and balance to be able to prioritize those things is very impressive. So,
well, amazing. Every day it's a challenge, but my dad was like, does it ever end? You know, like, you can constantly be working towards something. And it was really eye-opening when he said that.
especially from my dad, who is like this super hardworking immigrant. And I see some of my friends who own businesses that are bigger than mine and more successful, and they're still constantly hustling. And it doesn't matter how much you've achieved, because it's the mindset, right? If you feel like you're never doing enough, and that's all that your attention is focused on, you're never going to really be happy with what you're doing. At some point, you have to just say, like, no, I'm good. You know, like, I put my hours in today at work. There's always more I can do. Or I can spend this time going to the park and looking at nature and fulfilling myself in another way. It's definitely really hard to do in New York. But, I really advocate for people to think about how to balance their life more.
Perfect. Well, I guess you were the perfect person to ask that question.
Yes.
So I have probably one of the harder questions for you. It's a little game. Mm-hmm. It's, you know and love it. It's F, marry, kill.
Oh, God.
And I have curated three options for you.
Awesome.
That are going to be hard for you to choose from. So we've got F, marry, kill, garlic, spinach, and eggs.
Wait, so if I kill something, it means I just can never eat it again? Or like I'm killing it so I can cook it?
No, you're killing it. Like, it's gone. One of those things you're effing. Okay, so it's,
raucous. I know exactly. I would kill garlic. I almost never cook with garlic. I just cannot. I'm like, I don't want to peel this thing. I don't want to cut it.
It is very annoying. Oh, but the flavor aspect of it is...
Okay,
really
unmatched. See, I also grew up, my mom never cooked with garlic, and my brother lives in a Buddhist community, and a lot of Buddhists just don't cook with garlic because it actually hurts their stomach. So my mom and my dad and my brother actually all say they have an intolerance to garlic, which is insane. But it's a lot of people, I've heard people with that problem, yeah.
Okay,
so
good to know. Well, that was an easy
one. Definitely killing the garlic. Marry eggs. I put eggs in everything. What was the last option?
Spinach.
Oh, I don't want to fuck spinach though.
Real saucy with spinach.
Okay, I feel like, oh man. You know what? Maybe I would fuck spinach because it's a one-night stand.
And then move on.
You know what I mean? You move on, but you want to marry the eggs because it's also seductive, but it tastes good and it's reliable. You can put it with everything. It's like
always more, there for you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Interesting. That is not what I did not expect that on the garlic. I guess you didn't mention garlic earlier, but I just figured as someone who's kind of like cooking fresh stuff at home all the time, it's actually, I convinced my whole family to go from, you know, how they have like the jarred minced garlic from the grocery store. My family, my mom always used that. And, you know, she's a mom of three. So was cooking dinner, you know, three different dinners a night, like one when I got home, one when my, you know, so she was doing things, you know, pretty quick. And then when I started picking up my own, you know, culinary chops, I was like, what are you doing with that pre-minced, like canned garlic? That's so gross. You need to do fresh garlic. So it's one of my, like, you know, produce staples in the house. But that is so interesting to know. I had no idea about like the Buddhist garlic intolerance.
That's really funny.
Pseudo.
I don't like most things pre-chopped, but there's two things I really enjoy pre-chopped for me. If I'm using garlic, it's going to be garlic. And then pineapples, I really enjoy pre-sliced pineapple. I cannot deal – I just don't – in Jamaica, these guys can, like, cut this shit like magic. It's insane.
Yeah, they probably use, like, a big, like, axe thing and probably just, like –
Yeah.
Like a coconut.
Exactly. It looks like a machete. And they just, they slice it around. And it looks cool. For me, it's like,
that's a pain.
Struggle with it. And then you're cutting either too close or too not close enough to the skin. And oh, God.
Okay. Yeah, no, I can get behind that on the pineapple for sure. Any like big, like, and any big like root vegetable, like a rutabaga or something like that is so hard for me to cut.
That's so
you funny. Need so much like elbow grease, which I do not have, unfortunately. I'm not jacked.
but you know the best way to cut big root veggies, right? Like you have to just cut one side so it's flat and then
Even still, it's it's
no,
a chore.
It is like a really good arm workout.
Yeah. So I mean we gotta do what we gotta do. Get a pseudo pump in while you're doing your veggie prep. It's It's important. Yeah. Okay. Oh my gosh. Well, Wenjay, that wraps up all my questions for you. Was there anything else burning important that I did not mention about your culinary journey through life here?
Alexa, I wanted to add one more thing.
Please do. Okay.
I'm a woman that really loves to make my life streamlined, you know? So like if I'm traveling if I'm packing for a vacation, everything I pack should have multiple functions. And when you talk about like, how do you transition your life to cooking more seasonally? The reason why I don't think it's hard is because when I cook seasonally with produce from a farm that I really trust, that's farming responsibly, it's really just like in one quick fix, addressing all the values I care about in life. So it's like when you're cooking with these ingredients, it's more nutrients per bite. So you're actually getting more nutrients from fresh produce. And it, yeah, because
I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah, you think about like vegetables, for example, are a living, it's like a plant, right? You take the plant out of its living source, which is the soil, it just starts dying, right? So as it's dying, it's depleting its nutrients. So you'll actually get it, and it's also scientifically proven, conventional agriculture is so depleted of nutrients in the soil that, for example, it's a 27% decrease in vitamin C. They did a study over 20 years, and there was a 27% decrease in vitamin C in vegetables because of conventional agriculture. So there are studies that show that you actually get more nutrients per bite if you're eating fresh produce grown with regenerative agriculture. So one, you're getting better nutrition, okay? Which also means that you're going to feel full with eating less food. So I don't like to work out, but this feels like, hey, this is a great thing. Like, I'm not going to go on a diet. But this helps me out. And then I would also say, I love to support small businesses. This is a super easy way to be supporting small businesses and preserving farmland. Like I love nature, but I live in New York City, right? So by supporting local farms, it also means that this farmland is going to stay farming and it's not going to become a residential development, for example. And I really love to live sustainably. So instead of me being a farmer and moving away from the city, I'm going to just be cooking sustainably by not wasting any of the parts of the vegetables. I know that I am supporting farms that are traveling with less gas miles. We obviously know so many of the reasons why it's more sustainable. So that addresses that value system. So these are just some examples. And I also love really delicious food, right? So like I said before, there's more flavor in each, in fresh produce. So it's, for me, easy cooking. Things are more delicious. So I'm really just like, I'm actually kind of lazy, you know? And this, to me, eating seasonally is like a lazy way to live my life in all the ways that I feel like are important.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, you're killing like 10 birds with one stone.
Exactly.
And wow. Well, then when you put it that way, my goodness.
And I cook almost everything in one pot if I can, like except for greens. If I'm not eating grains, I cook everything in one pot so I can do minimal dishes.
Well, look at that. You're doing it all by doing the least. So
that's hashtag my motto right there.
Literally. Oh my God. I love that. Well, thank you, Wenjay, so, so, so much for joining me today. It's been a truly enlightening and scintillating conversation as always. And I'm like super inspired to kind of, now that I'm back in New York, kind of like redirect my efforts. And you know, it's about to be summer, so we're gonna have like gorgeous produce to choose from. And you know, I think that there are some easy ways to kind of make those changes, so I appreciate you enlightening me.
Alexa, I always have a ton of fun talking to you.
Yes.
So thank you for having me on the Feed Feed podcast, and shout out to the Feed Feed. You guys always have such beautiful content.
Thank you so much for listening. To learn more about the food and drink discovery platform that is the Feed Feed, head to thefeedfeed.com. Be sure to follow us on Instagram at the Feed Feed. And don't forget to follow Wenjay at Wenjay Ying, all one word, and Local Roots at Local Roots NYC, also one word, on Instagram. If you have a food story to tell or want us to interview a blogger, cookbook author, chef, or restaurateur who has helped you solve the what's for dinner question, we'd love your suggestions. Just send us a DM on Instagram. See you next time.
The Feed Feed is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradio.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from our listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Thanks for listening.